From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 31st day of August, 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. And then later in the program, the state statisticians from Iowa, Illinois, Nebraska, Minnesota, and Indiana, those are the five top corn-producing states in the nation, will join us to update crop conditions in their regions. And in the second half hour of our program, we call that the Farming World. Kerry Sifferaf of the U.S. Grains Council will be here. He's located in their Tunisia office. That's not too far off the Mediterranean in Africa. And will help us take a complete look at how the landscape has changed for the export market now that Russia has closed off its wheat export system. And it all happens on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished like this. The nearby September wheat at 652.5, down 18 and 3 quarters today. December at 685 and 3 quarters, 18 and 3 quarters lower. And the March wheat at 710, down 17 cents. The July contract for the new crop at 696 and 3 quarters, down 13 and a half. September wheat in Kansas City, down 22 and 3 quarters at 687 and 3 quarters. From the corn pit in Chicago, September futures 424.5, up penny lower. December, the harvest month, at 439 and a quarter. New crop down 2 and a quarter. March at 452 and a quarter, down 2 and a quarter. And the May at 458 and three quarters, down 2.5 cents. December corn of next year at 444 and a quarter, down 2.5. September soybeans at $10.08, down a dime. November at 1010, down 12.5. January 1019 and a quarter, down 12. And the March at 1024 and a quarter, down 11 and three quarters. November of next year at 1002 and three quarters, down 9 and a quarter. September bean meal at 304.20, down 340. September soybean oil at 39.48 today, down 47 cents. Livestock numbers, August live cattle futures unchanged at 97.25. The October at 97.27.5, down 77.5 cents. September feeders at 114.10, down a dollar. The October contract at 115.10, down 82.5 cents. And the October lean hogs today at $75.15, 27.5 cents higher. December futures there at 73.27.5, up 52.5 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, $71.92 a barrel, down $2.78 today. The ethanol at $1.93 and 8 cents. That's just about a tenth of a cent lower. Natural gas at $3.81 even is down 0.2 cents. The RBOB at $1.88 and 9 cents, down 4 and 4 tenths. And the gold futures on the afternoon at $1,248.30 an ounce, up $11.20. The Dow Jones Industrial Average for the day at 9,994, yes, it's below 10 grand, is down just about 15 points for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the Champaign-Urbana area says, as it is put out by the National Weather Service. This afternoon, mostly sunny skies, a high around 91 degrees, south winds at 15 miles an hour. Tonight, a 30% chance of showers, some thunderstorms that coming after 1 a.m. in the morning. Partly cloudy, a low around 70, south winds around 9 miles an hour again. And then on Wednesday, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, a high near 86, south-southwest winds between 10 and 13 mile an hour, gusting up to 16. Wednesday night, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms again, mostly cloudy. Lows around 69 degrees, south-southwest winds at 6 miles an hour. Thursday, another 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy, says the National Weather Service, with a high near 84 degrees. Winds out of the southwest at 6 to 15 with gust up to 21. Thursday night, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Partly cloudy, a low of 62 degrees. And then Friday, partly cloudy, a high near 78 degrees. Friday night, mostly clear. Lows 54. Saturday, the sunny, the high only 73 degrees. Saturday night, the low of 53. And Sunday, it'll be sunny and 76.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
This is the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. We're joined by phone now. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, is with us to take a look at the agricultural futures markets. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Did you have a busy day, or are farmers busy getting machinery ready to go?
Farmers are in the field or getting their machinery ready, and sort of quiet around the office. Not many people stopping in today, Todd. It's just a beautiful day out there, and I guess even a few people went to Iowa.
They may have gone to the Farm Progress Show, kind of like Dave Dickey, our director of ag programming. He's off this week. If you want to visit him, you can do that at the AgriGold tent there on the Farm Progress Show site. All every few minutes, I think, half hour or so, they'll have a ag panel that you can drop by and talk to the folks out there. But today we're talking to Wayne Nelson. So tell me, when you look at the marketplace, there was an awful lot of red today. Was that just an idea that needed to sink and there wasn't any fresh fundamental news to keep it higher?
I think there's a couple things going on today, Todd. I think we had some varying weather forecasts that might add a little rain to come in and help fill the bean pods a little more where they're still green. That possibility being brought on by the change in the weather forecast there this morning. I think that we're continuing to hear very varied corn yields, all over the board. It sort of tells us that probably we're not going to be able to hold with the estimates of last month just because you can't have record yields with varied yields. I mean, they all have to be good and some very good. So, I think that's one of the things. I think it's the 31st of the month. It's the end of the month, and we had some tremendous profits racked up by some of the funds, and I think that for their bookwork, they like to close some of those out here at the end of the month, and I think that's what we saw in the last 15 minutes today. What is really the cash wheat market? We're seeing the Chicago Board of Trade or the American CME changing and increasing the storage rates on some of this wheat, and changing things around and maybe make it a little more advantageous to want to move some of it rather than pay the high storage rates. So that and, some of the rain in Europe and different things moving around as to who does need what and who doesn't need what, and the also the crush margins going negative by the time you added the freight on beans out of the U.S. into China, I think all affected the market today.
You started by telling me that corn yields were variable around the nation and around the state. What are you hearing from north to south in Indiana and other areas?
Well, I think, some areas up north that had a lot of wetness early and had a lot of drowned out spots and like that could be under 150. We've heard some 130s in some of the silage fields that have been appraised as far as that goes. We've got one farmer that's done over 500 acres in the local area here that he's averaging right at 200 bushel. Another one that's done a couple hundred acres and he's at 180 at about 20%. And, we've heard over around Covington in the some of the sandier soils over there, where they're off 20 to 30 bushels. So very, very varying amounts. We just don't feel the corn yield is probably going to hold up to that 165.
You think Indiana will fall off dramatically from where USDA has put it?
Dramatically, I don't know about that, but three bushels possibly could be very much in the airing as far as that goes when they total things up at the end of the year.
How long till the Indiana farmers in the area think about putting a combine into the field for soybeans?
For soybeans, well, we've got one farmer that's got 600 acres done. He's
wow.
Averaging 55 to 60 bushels over there. We've heard anywhere from 42 to 60 bushel beans over here on what's been able and ready to go. So, you know, not a lot of beans being combined, but we have seen some fairly decent beans early here. Just a mile out of Newmarket here, I would heard some mid-50s from yesterday.
Are they calling and asking on the beans and the corn what they ought to do, whether they should sell it across the scale or store it?
Lafayette had a very, very hot basis bid here for delivery through this week, so there isn't much question on what they want to do. They were paying like 60 over for beans this week, so the answer isn't what to do, it's whether I can get them there fast enough.
Indeed, I suppose. What other kinds of questions are they asking? Anything particular?
Well, everybody wants to know what everybody else's stuff is doing. And like I said, so far we're seeing that the corn is off in a lot of areas. It's not quite up to expectations. And the beans, we haven't seen, you know, we're seeing them probably be a little bit better than what we thought they might be with this tremendously warm weather. I mean, you know, Indianapolis now, if we get by tonight without any rain, we're going to be the driest forever recording all the time that they've been recording in Indianapolis, driest August on record. So, you know, we're just a little bit skeptical. We had a lot of moisture in the ground, and we're very pleasantly surprised with the way some of the beans around here have been coming in.
Wayne, thanks much.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Well, nearly ideal growing conditions throughout the major corn-producing areas of the nation, reports USDA yesterday, continues to promote rapid development of this year's corn crop. They say by August the 29th, corn at or beyond the dough stage had advanced to 94% complete nationwide. That's 21 points ahead of last year and 8 points ahead of the 5-year rolling average. Double-digit progress was evident in 14 of the 18 major estimating states during the week, and by the week's end, 73% of this year's corn acreage was at or beyond the dented stage, 43 points or over 18 days ahead of last year, and 18 percentage points ahead of the 5-year average. Denting progress in Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Michigan, and Minnesota was 52 percentage points ahead of last year and 20 points ahead of the 5-year average. Corn in the mature stage advanced 9 points during the week, leaving progress at 17% complete, 12 points ahead of last year and 6 points ahead of the 5-year average. 70% of the crop reported in good to excellent condition. Soybeans, nationally, 96% of this year's bean crop was at the pod setting stage or beyond by the week's end, 4 points ahead of last year, slightly ahead of the 5-year average. Pod setting complete or nearly complete in all estimating states with the exceptions of Missouri and North Carolina. Overall, 64% of the soybean crop reported in good to excellent condition. Now, here are the state statisticians to update their regions.
This is Greg Tayson, director of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending August 29, 2010. Iowa farmers enjoyed the second consecutive week of below normal rainfall. Southwest Iowa, north and east to north central Iowa received light rain showers last week, while the eastern two-thirds of the state was dry. For much of Iowa, it has been the longest span without rain all growing season. Along with the mostly dry conditions, temperatures were near normal during the week, which promoted rapid crop development and gave livestock a nice break from the previous week's high heat and humidity. The corn crop continues to advance rapidly, with 77% of the crop at or beyond the dent stage, about 10 days ahead of the 5-year average. 8% of the crop has reached maturity, although in some instances maturity varies considerably within the same field. Corn condition improved slightly from last week to 69%, good to excellent. Pods have set on virtually all the soybean acres, and 14% of the crop has begun turning color, ahead of last year's 4% and the normal of 13%. Condition of the soybean crop is rated 69% good to excellent, up 1 point from last week, although sudden death syndrome is still a concern and the presence of white mold is being reported. This is Greg Tayson reporting from the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office.
This is Mark Schleusener with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Illinois Field Office, reporting on crop progress and conditions for the week ending August 29th. Illinois crops and livestock got a welcome break from above-average temperatures last week. The statewide weekly average temperature was below normal for the first time since early July. Most locations averaged 2 degrees below normal. However, precipitation was also below normal, with most locations reporting zero rainfall for the week. As a result, soil moisture supplies diminished slightly and were reported as 12% very short, 27% short, 59% adequate, and 2% surplus. Corn harvest has begun and reached 2% complete around the state. 87% of corn acres have reached the dent stage or beyond. This compares to 24% 1 year ago and 61% for the 5 year average. 34% of the crop is mature compared to 11% normally. The corn crop's condition declined a little last week, but 62% of corn acres are still in good or excellent condition. For soybeans, 22% of acres are turning yellow compared to 1% last year at this time and 13% normally. 5% of acres are shedding leaves, slightly ahead of normal. Soybean crop conditions also declined a little last week. 11% of the crop is rated in poor to very poor condition, 30% in fair condition, and 59% of soybean acres are in good to excellent condition. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Scott Keller with USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Nebraska Field Office with a weather and crops report for the week ending August 29th. Rain fell early in the week across the eastern half of the state, while western counties remained hot and dry. For the fifth week in a row, temperatures averaged above normal across the state with highs that reached 100 in the west and lows in the mid-40s. Wheat seeding began in a few panhandle areas in the west but was slow due to grasshopper concerns. Statewide corn condition remained mostly good to excellent, above year-ago levels, with 70% of the acreage having reached the dent stage well ahead of last year and average, with the first fields of corn considered mature. Silage cutting was underway as crop maturities continued to advance ahead of last year. Soybean conditions also rated mostly good to excellent, near year-ago levels. This is Scott Keller with USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, the Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
This is Doug Hartwig, Director of USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, with the weekly crop weather report for the week ending August 29, 2010. As of August 29th, 14% of the soybeans were turning yellow. That's 12 percentage points ahead of last year, however, 5 points behind the 5-year average. Soybeans were rated with 57% in good condition and 32% in excellent condition, virtually unchanged from a week ago. Corn development continued ahead of average. 95% of the corn was in the dough stage, compared to 48% last year and 79% for the average. Corn in the dent stage jumped 33 points this week to 68%, compared to 6% last year and 48% for the average. 2% of the corn reached the mature stage, compared to 0% last year and 3% for the average. Corn harvested for silage was 12% complete, compared to 4% last year and 13% for the average. Corn was rated with 51% in good and 40% in excellent condition, a slight increase from last week. That's the weekly crop weather report for the week ending August 29th, 2010. I'm Doug Hartwig, Director of USDA NAS, Minnesota Field Office.
Hello, this is Greg Preston, Director of the USDA NAS Field Office for Indiana, and this is the crop weather report for the week ending August 29th. Cooler weather brought little to no relief to field crops as fields dried down from the lack of rain. The much-needed precipitation did not arrive during the week, and topsoil moisture levels were further depleted. Yield potential for late-planted fields were diminished from the dry August weather. A limited number of corn fields have been harvested as farmers prepare and test their harvesting equipment. The drier conditions aided hay farmers who were busy cutting and baling hay. Some livestock producers have begun to feed hay as pasture conditions decline. 96% of the corn acreage is in dough, compared with 77% for last year and 89% for the 5-year average. 77% of the corn is in the dense stage compared to 21% for last year and 50% for the five-year average. 21% of the corn crop is mature compared with 0% for last year and 6% for the five-year average. Corn condition for the week declined and was rated at 57% good to excellent compared with 63% for last year at this time. 97% of the soybean acreage is setting pod compared to 86% last year at this time and 93% for the five-year average. 14% of the soybean acreage is shedding leaves compared to 2% for last year and 6% for the five-year average. Soybean condition is rated as 55% in the good to excellent category compared with 63% for last year at this time. This is Greg Preston reporting from the Indiana NAS Field Office.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Lernard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Lernard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids, to farmers throughout East Central Illinois. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Please do visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Up next, we'll update you on the RMA's crop insurance programs. They've changed just a bit, and most farmers will find them easier to use in the future. USDA's Risk Management Agency, or RMA, is responsible for the federal crop insurance products. When the farmers, wheat this fall and other crops next spring, when the farmers sign up to have the 2011 crops federally insured, they'll find some new names and a few missing items. Well, Gary Schnitke follows the crop insurance for University of Illinois and has posted an article outlining the new crop insurance combo products on the FarmDoc website.
What we tried to do in this article is just explain the basics of it and also linked what the combo product plans are to the old plans that producers used to buy. So if a producer used to buy CRC and RA with the harvest price option, under the combo product, that will be now revenue protection. And actually, revenue protection works very much the same as CRC and RA. So the combo product also has a yield protection plan, which is the same as APH, and a revenue protection with a harvest price exclusion, which would be the same as RA with a base price option and income protection.
The idea behind the new combos, the updated federal crop insurance package, is to streamline the process. To that end, Extension Farm Management Specialist Schnitke says farmers should make note some of the old products are simply gone.
Before this, if you wanted a revenue plan with a harvest guarantee increase, you could look at either CRC or RA harvest price. Now there's only one, so eliminated the choices. The idea was to make it simpler and more coherent across the plans.
Well, farmers wanting to insure the 2011 winter wheat crop will be the first to sign up for the new products. That'll happen yet this fall. It is why Schnitke used wheat as an example in the FarmDoc website article on the new insurance combos.
We took wheat as an example because if you're signing up for wheat, that deadline is approaching in September. So we give examples of how revenue protection, yield protection, and revenue protection with the harvest price exclusion works. We also have a little table in there that maps the products so you can look at revenue protection and what it replaces.
You may read Schnitke's article on the updated crop insurance choices on the FarmDoc website at www.farmdoc.illinois.edu. He says most farmers want to know if and how premiums for the products might change. Those calculations are not yet available, but as soon as they are, they'll be incorporated into the crop insurance calculators also available on the FarmDoc website. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. In just 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast with Don Day. Stay with us.
It's National Trail Mix Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1742, a plague of grasshoppers destroyed crops in Pennsylvania. In 1836, African-American inventor Henry Blair was issued a patent for a cottonseed planter. By the way, his patents were signed with a simple X because he had not learned to read or write. In 1900, Sir John Bennett Laws died, an English agronomist. He founded the artificial fertilizer industry. Together with Sir Joseph Gilbert, they conducted agricultural experiments at Rothamsted Experimental Station, the oldest agricultural research station in the world. They are considered the founding fathers of agricultural sciences. In 1900, Coca-Cola went on sale for the first time in Britain. In 1921, the first successful demonstration of an aerial crop dusting was performed in Ohio by Lieutenant John A. McCready. He was flying a Curtiss JN6H, most fondly known as the Flying Jenny. In 1960, the National Agricultural Center and Hall of Fame was established. And in 1995, the summer was so hot in Missouri that at the end of August, methane gas emitted within large bales of freshly cut hay began to spontaneously combust. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming is with us on this beautiful afternoon to talk about the agricultural weather forecast. The only thing that's not so great is, well, some folks in the eastern Corn Belt would like a little rainfall. They're going to get any, Don?
Well, I think we've got some chances. There's going to be a series of cool fronts that will be marching across first the Northern Plains and the Rockies, and then into the Upper Great Lakes and the Midwest. Now, at first, it's going to be rain that's going to get the western areas. The Western Corn Belt, the Northern Corn Belt, Central Corn Belt, those areas have the best chances for precipitation. I do think that next week, the odds of rain getting a little bit further into the Eastern Corn Belt look better. But that's the good news, next week. The bad news is, between this week and into the weekend, any shower activity in the Eastern Corn Belt is going to be light and spotty. So it's going to be 5 or 6 days before those better chances of rain can move in.
Just how dry are they in the Eastern Corn Belt, and where are the driest pockets?
Well, if you were to look at a soil moisture map, you would certainly find that certainly Ohio, Indiana, those areas are the driest. And there's some dry areas also showing up in central and southeastern areas of Illinois. But it's eastern sections of Indiana, Ohio, that at least at the moment are showing the driest soil moisture profiles.
Take a look further out. You talked about maybe some rainfall, not next week, but the week after that. Are these really good shots? I know it's tough to make that kind of call, but are those systems getting in place so it really looks like rainfall will come?
Well, the cold fronts that are starting to form now, as you'd expect in early September, are going to pack a little bit more punch, a little more contrast between the cold air behind them and the warm air ahead of them. So there is the opportunity for some heavier shower and thunderstorm activity mid to late week with some of these, but it is too early to tell whether or not it's going to be of the coverage and the magnitude that may be helpful, other than the fact that at least the chances will be getting better to get wet as compared to the last few weeks.
Let's turn your attention to the Great Plains. They'll be sowing wheat at this time and on into the fall.
Certainly some shower activity across portions of Nebraska, Kansas, and Oklahoma will be increasing. Areas that have been dry here recently will be able to get some precipitation, so they might be able to see a little bit of soil moisture in those areas.
Have you been still watching China? They're getting closer to their harvest season, just as we are, and they've had a pretty rough growing season so far. Did it get better late in the season, and will they start harvest out all right?
Well, you know what? They're still going to have some problems. It has been a pattern that has been quite persistent, as you said, rough. And while the weather pattern is a little more settled, not as stormy for China, we're still looking at frequency of fronts and systems moving through as being fairly high. So there could be some wet areas and some interruptions with harvest due to some unsettled weather.
And I know it's a bit early, but have you turned your attention southward yet to South America and subsoil levels and how planting might proceed once they get started in Brazil and Argentina?
Well, they have had a very cold winter down there. And as they get into their spring season, it's likely going to be a cold start and a wet start to their spring season. If you look at soil moisture, the moisture profiles aren't bad in South America. Now, Brazil is a little bit dry, although soil moisture profiles in Argentina are moist. In fact, some areas in Argentina have above normal soil moisture right now.
Don, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. You've been listening to the Closing Mark Report. Stay tuned for the farming world if you can. Otherwise, you can listen at willag.org. You're listening to the Farming World news and information from the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason from U of I Extension. On the phone line with us is Carrie Sitherath. He is the USGC Senior Director in the Mediterranean and Africa. USGC stands for U.S. Grains Council. Mr. Sitherath, thank you so much for being with us. Where are you exactly?
I'm located in our office here in Tunis, Tunisia, which is right on the Mediterranean coast, kind of just south of Italy. But we cover quite a range of territory, including most of North Africa and pretty much all of the European Union, and even keep an eye on what's going on in the Black Sea region.
We know a bit about the U.S. Grains Council, and it promotes grains from the United States into the export market. Why are you stationed where you are, and what kinds of things do you do?
Well, the U.S. Grain Council, as you said, is does promotional work and develop markets for U.S. corn, barley, sorghum, and their co-products, which today the big co-product being distillers dried grains, or DDGS. And thanks to our membership support, which includes like the Illinois Corn Marketing Board and the checkoff funds that come from the corn farmers of in the state there in Illinois, it allows us to do the market promotion work we do around the world, including here in the Mediterranean region. We do various programs, everything from trying to develop markets where we look at trying to increase feed grain use in poultry sectors or ruminant dairy and beef sectors across the region here, where we're actually working directly with some of the bigger feed companies or even companies trying to set up feedlot operations so that we're feeding cattle, specifically like in Morocco, where we're working to put more cattle on feedlots where they're getting fed much higher levels of feed grains, predominantly their corn and sorghum, and then also now working to get DDGS use in those type of rations. Other things we do work on is trying to overcome trade barriers and reduce import tariffs. We've done work in Tunisia and Morocco in the past to reduce import tariffs and bringing them down to zero on products like distillers grains. We're currently doing the similar work in Algeria, where right now there's a 30% import duty on DDGS in Algeria. And so because of that, there's no trade or sales of U.S. distillers grains into Algeria. So we're working on trying to have that duty reduced so that we can open up that market as well. And then we do a lot of trade servicing, working with various organizations and even traders and importers directly to bring them up and give them the latest development on what's going on with the U.S. market. And we've seen a lot of that here recently just with some locations in Europe with all that's happened in the recent upswing in wheat and barley and other feed grain prices in both Western and Eastern Europe, trying to work with some of the organizations and traders across Europe to see if there's potential for increased market for U.S. Feed grains into Europe again, both feed grains, predominantly sorghum because of some of the GM issues on U.S. corn, as well as trying to increase the amount of DDGS that's going to get shipped into Western Europe this year.
Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because, of course, we follow very closely the marketplace and the uptick in the wheat market as the Russian drought came to the front or the fore maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago and drove prices sharply higher. There was much talk about the need for substitution potentially in feed wheat of either mostly the talk was corn. We hadn't really thought, I suppose, about sorghum or DDGS. Apparently that's easier to get into Europe. What do you see in Africa and in the Mediterranean and the Middle East, Egypt in particular, and whether they can do much substitution or will, and what that global sort of stock looks like for feed wheat?
Yeah, well, obviously, when Russia came about and pretty much, well, they have officially put a ban on all grain exports from August 15th through the end of 2010. And most people think they'll probably extend that into 2011, depending on how much or how good their winter seeding of wheat and barley goes. But a lot of people think that'll be extended. Ukraine hasn't officially banned any exports, but they've done a lot of things to try and slow down how much grain is leaving the country. And thus we've seen, wheat and barley and even corn prices coming out of that Black Sea region skyrocket. And so countries that have been relying on wheat or corn out of that Black Sea region are now, or even barley, are now scrambling to look for alternatives. And it's in Russia, most of their wheat that they were exporting was milling quality, not necessarily feed wheat. But because of the wheat prices increasing in Russia, that had driven up Ukrainian wheat prices, which a lot of Ukrainian wheat exports are for feed wheat uses. And so you're seeing, a lot of people if across the Mediterranean region, North Africa, looking for alternatives. Egypt, which had been buying large amounts of Russian and Ukrainian wheat for milling use, but also had been using a fair amount of corn out of that Black Sea region, has now shifted and has gone back to buying quite a bit of U.S. corn here again. USDA's release last week just showed that the Egyptians had bought 420,000 metric tons of corn for delivery in the next marketing year, which will start here on September 1, which we're just 2 days away from. And that's, 16.5 million bushels of corn that was purchased at one time by the Egyptians. And so you're not necessarily seeing a substitution. They're buying corn now from the U.S. rather because of the increased costs or even just lack of being able to get corn out of that Black Sea market region. Other countries like Israel had recently purchased some U.S. sorghum to replace some of the feed wheat they were buying. Across North Africa, Tunisia, Algeria, we've started to see some U.S. corn come back into those markets that we had been losing in part to the Black Sea region, in other cases to Argentine corn. But again, because of that high-priced or lack of ability to get corn out of that Black Sea region, we're seeing Tunisia and Algeria come back, and even Morocco, which had been even prior to the increased prices in Ukrainian feed grains, we've seen Morocco come back to buying some more U.S. origin as well. So across the North African region, we're seeing quite a bit of increased U.S. sales, and a good part of that is due to the fact of the Russian export ban and the increased prices in the Ukraine. And then even in Europe, if you look at Ireland and Spain, which are the two bigger countries that tend to import feed grains, they've been looking or rather more complaining about the very high prices of feed wheat and barley within the EU and looking at trying to bring in other alternatives. There's a lot of difficulties in bringing in U.S. corn into the EU, although there was one vessel of U.S. corn that was traded into Germany here and actually arrived about 10 days ago. As far as I know, there wasn't any difficulties with that vessel being unloaded, but there, from what I was told, there was some certification on a barge by barge basis to make sure there was no non-EU approved GM corn events in that shipment. But while we're seeing some countries in the European Union looking to alternative feed grains, other parts of Europe, we're now seeing French wheat being exported, both for feed wheat and for milling wheat. And so the Western Europe isn't necessarily short of grain. It's just the prices are high, and some people think a lot of that is just speculation, is increased prices because of what's going on in Russia and Ukraine, and that it doesn't necessarily meet with the supply and demand situation in Western Europe. So,
yeah. So there is some realignment then of where sourcing of where these grains are sourced. The United States is coming up on the high end in a couple of spaces, but it's not about, I suppose, in your case, just the short term or the one time, one crop year sourcing. You'd prefer to have it, and so would farmers in America, that they become the primary source. Can you take some opportunity at this point to help that along?
Well, I think definitely the European Union is always going to be, you know, there's all kinds of policy issues and the biotech corn issue, and most years they're not necessarily in the market for importing corn or other feed grains. So that's kind of a 1 year they might be in the next 4 years or so they're not. But other markets, especially across North Africa, are on a continuing basis, you know, a feed grain or a corn importing markets. And so the work that we do in those countries to help develop feed grain demand, corn and DDGS and other feed grain demand there, as well as continuing to drive home the message that the U.S. is a reliable supplier. And so we're always there. We're always, you know, the prices may go up and down as the world supply and demand situation fluctuates, but we aren't about to, you know, cut or ban exports, as we've seen. You know, Russia has now done this twice in the last 2 to 3 years, and if Ukraine, again, they banned exports a few years back as well. This year, so far they haven't officially banned, but they've made it very difficult. And so, to make sure we continue to send out that message that the U.S. is a reliable supplier year in and year out, and that we will be there to supply the world market. And aren't about to put export bans. So to send that message home to these buyers across the region, especially after they have to scramble and try to find ways to cover the corn or the wheat that they were expecting to get out of that Black Sea region. So I think as we continue to send that message to these buyers across North Africa, that definitely should help us in the long-term situation of increasing U.S. market share across this North African region.
And at this point, you really don't think there's a shortage in the grains. It's just a matter of realigning where those are being sourced. Is that right?
Well, you're definitely, you know, you're taking 10 million tons or so of Russian wheat exports off the market. Ability or the lack of Ukrainians to supply feed wheat or corn because of either high prices or just lack of ability to get vessels out of their country. It's definitely meaning that those buyers that had been buying that are having to go and look elsewhere. So there is, you know, there is some reduction in that total world amount of feed grains or even wheat, but it's not drastic enough, at least so far, to really warrant maybe some of the prices that we've seen, at least across Europe. Now, the lack of Russian wheat is increasing the amount of wheat coming out of the U.S., and again, the lack of corn and feed wheat going to those countries is increasing the amount of corn exports coming out of the U.S., so that's obviously going to affect corn prices in the U.S. as well, and we've seen that with some stronger prices in the U.S. here the past few weeks, and depending on how good the U.S. crop is this fall, we'll have a lot of determining factor as well into the prices we see throughout the fall and into the winter.
We're talking with the senior director in the Mediterranean and African area of the United States Grains Council. His name is Kerry Siparath. More with him in a moment.
Here's something of interest from the University of Illinois.
Children who have asthma are at high risk for separation anxiety, but a new study has found a home remedy that parents can use: regular family mealtimes. The director of University of Illinois' Family Resiliency Center, Barbara Feese, says that it makes sense that children who have difficulty breathing might be anxious and prefer to keep their parents, who help them in an emergency, close by. In the study, Feese and her colleagues found supportive interaction during family mealtimes helps increase a child's sense of security and eases separation anxiety symptoms. And when children are less anxious, their lung function improves. According to Feese, family members play an important role in helping children emotionally manage their asthma symptoms, adding that a supportive, organized environment during mealtimes helps put a child at ease, whereas a chaotic, unresponsive atmosphere fosters worry and anxiety. And that's something of interest from the University of Illinois.
Something of Interest is a public service of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois.
Learnerd Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Learnerd Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids, to farmers throughout East Central Illinois. Learnerd Seed Service, 217-497-2270. Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to The Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our guest today, Kerry Siparaff of the USGC, that's U.S. Grains Council. He's a senior director in the Mediterranean and Africa area and is located in Tunisia. Mr. Siparaff, let's take up DDGs. You've talked extensively about them. I'm wondering, as the ethanol market in the United States was developing and the U.S. Grains Council looked out and knew that there would be a large amount of DDGs, the byproduct of ethanol production, on the marketplace that was fairly cheap, needed a place to be moved to. What were the discussions about how to use it, where to put it, and if it could be used in the export market?
Well, I think, even 4 or 5 years ago, the Grains Council had recognized that with the growth of the ethanol industry. And while a good portion of those distillers' grains are going to be used in the U.S., there's going to have to be a portion of that going into the export market, where DDGS prices are just going to plummet and really hurt the bottom line of the ethanol plants or even the corn farmers back in the U.S. So even starting 5 years ago or so, we are at that time we're doing a lot of promotion of the product, teaching different end users and importers how to best feed it in various types of rations from poultry and swine rations and as well as dairy and beef rations, not just in my region but worldwide. And we've seen that development and introducing traders and suppliers in the U.S. to buyers around the world through various programs and teaching the end users throughout the world how to properly feed it has really developed the DDGS export market. Previous to me coming here to Tunisia and working in the Mediterranean market, I was in our Beijing, China office and did a lot of work to help introduce distillers grains to the end users there in China. And when I first arrived in China, there was virtually almost a zero market for distillers grains from the U.S. And we've already seen over 1 million tons traded this year, and we'll probably see close to 2 million tons of distillers grains going into China by the end of 2010. So the work that the Grain Council does to introduce that product into new markets around the world and teach the end users how to properly use it has really helped expand the market for DDGS across North Africa here and even into big new markets like China, various markets in Southeast Asia, Taiwan, have all become big importers, as well as our neighboring countries in Mexico and Canada are also very big end users of it as well.
Mostly introduced into livestock rations, I suppose, and poultry, pork, and beef?
Yeah, and it varies by country where it best, and there's obviously there's some countries, especially in here in North Africa, where it's Muslim-dominated culture. You don't have any swine industries, but it's being used in some countries predominantly in swine rations. Other countries, it's being used very heavily in the layer industry or the broiler. Countries that have fairly big ruminant, dairy, and beef sectors, it's being used fairly heavily there. And even in certain countries, specifically down in Southeast Asia, down in Vietnam, I know it's been introduced and used in aquaculture even. So it varies from market to market. And so that's why, you know, we have to have an array of different programs to teach people how to use it in whichever sector we think it will best be competitive in that market.
When you split this this product up, the corn, that is, into a couple of different products, into ethanol and then the DDGs, does the U.S. Grains Council see that as opportunity across the board for producers? There's often sort of this food v. fuel fight, but in this case, you're serving both of those masters.
Yeah, I mean, there's been discussions in the past, both domestically in the U.S. or even in around the world, about food versus fuel. But I think, the expansion of DDGS, both the use in the U.S. and the export market, has shown that it can, and, you know, that's replacing corn and other ingredients around the world. When it's being used, so it's while we're using corn to produce ethanol, we're still putting back a feed ingredient back into the market that can be used by the livestock industry. And as once you teach people how to use it properly, there's nothing that allows distillers grains to help meet the needs and that along with the increasing corn production that's being done that we've seen by the U.S. corn farmer the last several years, I don't think there's really a need to worry about having an efficient amount of corn to meet the demands of feed and fuel in the U.S. and our export customers.
Mr. Siffarath, thank you so much for taking the time with us today. We do appreciate it.
Sure.
Kerry Siffarath is a senior director in the Mediterranean and Africa for the United States Grains Council. Joined us here on The Farming World. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always hear it again if you'd like in our willag.org website. Look for the closing market report. It's in the second half of that program. It's called The Farming World. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Rob O'Malley in Champaign at 217-378-7633. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.